UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
On the V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
You've got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. Waiting for you to get your headphones on. You've got to be kidding me. Tell the people, state your business. What were you doing back there?
I'm older now, and so I do things that make me happy. And what makes me happy was I was giving them a tour in the back of my bobbleheads. People don't like to go in your office when you're not there. So Scott and Brian came in, and we did the tour, and they were pointing out their favorites. And I showed them the best bobblehead that's ever been made, which is Willie Mays. And then they didn't know that I was a bobblehead, which I was pretty excited to show them that one. And I, you know, when they had it made, they asked you some questions, and I got to pick my body type, and I'm nice and slender in the bobblehead, and I told the artist, you just keep your mouth shut and put me at my head on that body. That's fine. So me and Will Wolford, I enjoyed that. And then Dawn, everybody loves bobbleheads. Dawn had to come in the studio to see Ben Franklin here. She was dazzled by Ben's bobblehead. Some of them are way more detailed than others.
That made Ben very, very happy.
Yeah, well,
the notorious wheeling, dealing son of a gun
Ben appreciates Franklin. Lovely women, and so he was very pleased about that. And then Sam offered her a beer, but she said she was working. And so, yeah, bobbleheads are awesome. Yeah, but do you know Brian has an uncle who has 800 bobbleheads?
Wow. Yeah. We should have him on the show. Yeah. During the summer. That'd be fun. That'd be real fun.
If Sutton had been standing straight up, what would the call have been? The call would have been a travel, I would think. It would have been traveling because he was in a legal guarding position, and the guy then stumbled over him and called the travel. Same way when Dwayne went offensively at the other end. You remember in the first half, he drove and got his feet tangled up with a guy, and he went, you know, basically face first, and the ball just sailed out of bounds, and they didn't call anything. And that's because the guy was in a legal guarding position, so he stumbled, and that was that. So you got that. Trades galore, by the way, in the National Basketball Association.
Hey, did you touch on the New York Knicks doing some things? That's why I use New York, New York as bumper music in the first hour. By the way, Neil Greenberg will join at 1:30, our friend from the Washington Post, to talk some college hoops. Did you know college hoops is actually his favorite thing to talk about?
You're kidding me.
At least that's what Nassim, his PR lady, said. She's awesome.
Nassim
Amini. She's the publicist for
Forgive me,
Washington
I'm not being
Post.
A snarky person. I didn't know Nassim was a female name, but I'm not that familiar with, what is that?
Middle Eastern?
Arab Middle Eastern names, yeah. The Knicks have hired Leon Rose. I wanted to get Mike Pratt on because Mike has told me now for a year plus on the Fast Break Friday show that the immense power of the agents right now, whether you like it or not, that's the reality. And Leon Rose is an agent. Brady Van Wijnden-Gordon, whatever the hell his name is, the guy who took over for the Mets as an agent. Rob Pelinka used to be Kobe's agent, is now running the Lakers. The guy who was at the Warriors is another guy who's an agent. This is what they're doing now. And I don't know. It's worked. But it's just incredible that they have become the most important people in sports. They have superseded the owners. They probably have. Because the owners own the team and they can screw things up only on one level. But the agents can screw it up on both levels. Because now they're in management and they represent labor. So they can screw the whole thing up. It's pretty awesome that they have the ability to just get their nose in everything. Or they can make things great if you want to be that way. But, I mean, the guy that the Knicks evidently were targeting is the guy who, and you got a Masai Ujiri, who's the guy who built the Toronto Raptors. Supposedly he wanted to come to the Knicks.
That would have been awesome.
It would have been, because you know how good he is?
How good is he?
They lost that fairly good player.
Kawhi Leonard?
Kawhi Leonard guy, you might have heard of him.
The Claw.
And despite that, I'm checking, but if I'm not mistaken, they are right now, come on, stop doing that phone. They are 37-14, and they've won 12 games in a row. How good an organization do you have to put together to lose a guy who was the MVP and dominant? Think about other sports that have won championships and then for whatever reason, budgets or they had, I mean, in all sports, the Miami Marlins, the players leave and then it goes absolutely in the crapper. This guy loses Kawhi Leonard and has put together an organization that is so good, they're still 37-14. They've won more games before the All-Star break than the Knicks will win all year by far. Not even close.
How many have the Knicks won so far?
And 14? They've won 12 in a row. 12 consecutive games. I mean, this is a guy that's put together one organization that is outstanding. And to have somebody who actually knew what the hell they were doing, if they could have just gotten him and got out of his way. But I guess, first of all, they're not even going to get him. I guess it's not that easy. Toronto, they would have to give Toronto all sorts of stuff. But I'll tell you, I'd be tempted if I were James Dolan to say, you can have the Rangers if you want. But he's outstanding. What a job he's done. So the Knicks will try it again with another guy. We'll see. We will see as they go forward and continue to their merrily sucking ways. But the NBA has had some good deals going down. Wow. Some good trades.
Did you announce Cal's going to the Knicks?
No, I did not, because World Wide West evidently is in
also
negotiation
talks, yeah,
to go to join the Knicks. The problem is the Knicks are signing him as the starting two guard, and I don't think that's a good move. That's a perfectly Nick thing to do, though. No, but if he goes there, then maybe Cal. Sorry, UK fans, but I think Cal in his heart of hearts would always like another crack at the NBA, but that ship may have sailed. So I'm not trying to start rumors. I don't imagine. I mean, what a train wreck that is. But boy, would he be a hero there if he ever could rebuild that thing. Here are the trades. The Golden State Warriors have agreed to trade D'Angelo Russell to the Minnesota Timberwolves in a deal that includes Andrew Wiggins and then a couple of draft picks, one in 2021, one in 2022. The Warriors will send Jacob Evans and Amari Spellman to the Timberwolves. The Warriors, I think, are going to get themselves back in position to be good next year when they get all these guys back from rehab. So that's what they're doing. The Clippers traded Derek Walton Jr. to the Hawks for good old American money. The Lakers are trying to swing a trade, but I'm sorry, that one hasn't come to pass. The other big trade that came down at 12:20 today was the Miami Heat trading Justice Winslow. This is a multiplayer extravaganza here. The Miami Heat trading Justice Winslow, Deion Waiters, James Johnson to the Grizzlies for Andre Iguodala, Solomon Hill, and Jay Crowder. Then evidently, part of that was Miami and Oklahoma City were trying to reach a deal on Danilo Gallinari, but that still is very much up in the air. And in fact, it appears those talks have stalled, but doesn't mean that they're over yet until the deadline passes. We talked about the Knicks making their deal. The Hawks have made it official and waived Nene, who was acquired from the Houston Rockets in the 4-team, 12-player blockbuster deal that sent Clint Capella to Atlanta. That $2.7 million salary of his would have been come guaranteed if they hadn't waived him before February 15th. So they did that. The Warriors are all over the map in deals here. The Sixers have agreed in principle to get Glenn Robinson III and Alec Burks from the Golden State Warriors. Philadelphia are going to send 3 second-round draft picks to Golden State. So Golden State obviously stockpiling draft choices in a way to, I'm sure, parlay those into either drafting for the future or getting some players that I think next year they intend to fully be back in the competitive swing. Let's see what we've got here. Other deals. That seems to be the main ones, although there's still talks going down. But the latest of the eyebrow raising ones are Andrew Wiggins going to Golden State. So, you know, he's a weird guy to assess. And he's a guy that for some reason people are perceiving as a bit of a failure. And he's averaging 22.5 points a game. I don't completely understand that. I don't know what people thought he was going to do. Maybe because their team is not winning, and so there's lots of disappointment around some of those people. But guy's averaging, he's 17th in the league in scoring. He's averaging 5.5 rebounds, 22.5 points, just under 4 assists. I mean, it's hard for me to look at that and say he's been a bust, but there hasn't been a lot of enthusiasm for how his career has gone so far. So I'm not sure what you make of that. Yeah, somebody said not only have the Raptors won more by the All-Star game than the Knicks will win all year, but there's a chance this winning streak will be longer than the Knicks win all year. Legal guarding position. What is the definition? If I'm blocking out to rebound and someone runs over me from the side, am I the guilty party? No, of course not. If I fall to the floor under the basket and someone rebounding trips over me without the ball, am I guilty of a foul? That's where the debate comes in. And I think most officials will tell you common sense says no. If you're playing the game and in the course of the action, you stumble and lose your balance, you get knocked down, and you're on the floor, and then someone stumbles over you, I don't think they will call a foul on you. But if the guy has a basketball and stumbles over you and it causes him to travel, it's the same thing like Wara used his offhand just in a very slight push yesterday, and the people got all pissed off. But then as I watched the replay, I realized he gained an advantage by that. And if you're an official, you got to call it if a guy gains an advantage. You know, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, that was the call in the Super Bowl. The San Francisco guy with the slight push off, and they called the offensive pass interference on the touchdown.
I think that was Kelsey.
No, it wasn't. It was Kansas City. It was Kelsey.
Oh, Kittle.
It was Kittle. That's what I thought. It was the San Francisco guy. I mean, I looked at that, and people went, "Oh my God!" But I said, "You got to call that." He gained an advantage. So, but you know, it sometimes the phrasing of the rule. That was the main, if you weren't with us, Scott Kennedy, who's a basketball official as well as a very successful baseball umpire, came and joined us, and he made the point, and he's right. He's absolutely right about this. The rule as it's written is how these officials are going to be evaluated. And if you want to get the big games, the postseason games, they're watching every call on tape. They do. And so you got to call it that way. So, I mean, it's not like you can get the microphone and announce to the crowd, you know, "I'm sorry, I don't particularly personally agree with that rule, but the rule says this is what it is," and so they have to call it. So that's what they do. But the fact is, they also have some latitude if no advantage was gained. But in this case, when that guy fell over him, you would either had to call a travel or you had to call Sutton for a foul by what the rules say. But I watched it, and I thought he traveled before he made contact with him, which would have been a bit of a bailout, you know, would have given the official an out. But I really do. If you watch him, he catches it, and he takes like three small steps backwards, I think, before he stumbles over him. But regardless, that is what the rule said. So
what was the ruling on is there any difference on if you trip over somebody or you just trip over your own feet? On that, like when Dwayne went down,
what about it?
Does it influence the outcome of the play at all?
If you trip over your own feet, yeah. Well, how are you going to call a foul on yourself?
No. Just on that, whatever play it was earlier. I got like three different things going on here, so I'm sorry if I missed out on something you brought up. A caller just passed along and said that they went back to watch the replay on that one play you were talking about with Dwayne in the lane.
Yes.
To see if he got tangled up. And he just tripped over his own feet. Does that outcome the call at all? I'm just passing this along.
No, I don't think that's why he called. I think why he was, because anybody with a brain larger than a peanut is going to know, what the hell could you call if you tumbled over your own feet? I mean, what the hell?
All right, well, I'm sorry.
Okay, so he was saying was he was trying to point out to me that I said he stumbled over the guy's feet. He actually stumbled over his own feet. That still doesn't take away from my point, which my point was, if he stumbled over a guy's foot that's in a legal guarding position, they're not going to call it. That was the whole point. And so whether I thought that we watched that play, I'm still not totally sure. I thought he just tipped the guy's ankle as he went by him. We only watched one replay once during the game. In fact, he didn't touch anybody. Okay, good. Then you saw something that I missed when I only watched the one replay. But if he had stumbled over that guy's foot, and the guy wasn't sliding so that he stuck his foot in his path, he just was on the floor, and you stumble over his foot, then it's out of bounds. There's no call to be made there. That's the point. So just because a guy stumbles doesn't mean it's going to be a foul. That was the point. Guy says what I said. He traveled before he tripped over Sutton. Yeah, that was my point. That was my point. I watched him come down. He landed, and he took three small steps, and then he stepped over Sutton. And as an official, I hate to say it, the small officiating I've done, you love when that happens because that gives you an easy bailout. You know, you don't have to decide whether it's a foul or like let it go. Or the guy traveled, and if Danny Manning says anything, say, Coach, he walked before he touched him. You know, if you'd seen that, you know, if you're confident that's what happened, that would have been a bailout. But that was my point. I watched it. I thought he walked before he stepped over Sutton also, to be honest with you. But the answer is, just because you get your legs tangled up with a player on defense doesn't mean the foul's on the defense. If his feet are standing, he's stationary, he's legally there, you get his feet, your feet get tangled up, it's on you. Or they're probably not going to call any foul because they're certainly not going to call a charge for tripping over his ankle. But if you do and then you fall down, they'll call a travel on you, or you lose your balance, the ball comes, you fumble the ball away. Oh, well. So that's the difference in that case. What they're saying about Sutton is it's not a legal guarding position, but, you know, it's to me, the rule has to account for intent. In other words, if a guy's trying to drive down the lane and you dive across the lane, you know, like the guy in Tiananmen Square there, and you're just trying to, you know, block the advancement of the ball, of course that should be a block on you, even if you're there before he is. But in this case, it's part of the rebound. He was knocked around, and those things happen. And, you know, you see that all the time. You'll see a guy get a rebound, and it's part of the game. He catches it, and he bangs into an opponent. He bangs into his own man. He falls to the floor, and the official calls traveling. And the place loses their mind. And you know what? It's the right call. You can't fall to the floor without moving your pivot foot, I mean, unless you're Gumby. I mean, and so that's a travel. And so that's what they're supposed to call. So it's tough. There's a lot of people who get mad about calls that they don't really understand the rule. For example, just because the ball hits a defender on the foot is not a kick ball. He's got to deliberately move his leg in the path of the pass in order for it to be a kick ball. And again, use common sense why that rule would be that way. If I were dribbling I look at the shot clock, it's down to three, I'm not going to get a shot off. If the rule was simply hit the guy in the foot with it and I get a new 20 seconds, everybody on offense would just take it and throw it at the guy's ankle. Beep, kickball, 20 more seconds. So, of course not. He's got to intend to block the pass with his foot. He's got to move towards it. Now, sometimes you could say, well, he was moving his foot there, but he wasn't deliberately trying to kick it like a soccer player. It's still a kickball if, as he's sliding to get in the path of the pass, you know, he's trying to move himself over so he can deny the pass, and he moves his foot there and he kicks. It, they could still call a kickball there because he made a conscious effort to move his foot and it wound up, blocking the pass. So that's an odd rule, by the way. I mean, that goes back to when basketball was in its very formative stages, when you were still concerned about soccer and stuff, that you can't kick the ball. I mean, I'm not sure why you would want to deliberately kick the ball. You know, it's not like we're going to get field position, but that is the rule. So, that there's a whole bunch of rules like that. And we talk about it because terminology that we use is very imprecise and it confuses things more than it straightens them up. For example, there is no such thing as an over the back call. It does not exist. It's a term that largely came from the NBA. And some people interpret that as, well, if you rebound from the back, you're going to get an over the back call. That's not true. You're allowed to rebound from the back. The foul is actually pushing in the back. But, the NBA has used that terminology for years and it's made its way into the college game. But as a rule, as a quote unquote foul, it doesn't exist. Not that it's legal to make contact from the back. It's just the term over the back is not a formal foul call. It's a push in the back. That's what it would be. So if I'm taller than you by 6 inches and you trying to block me out and I just can reach over you and get the ball, that's not a foul. And people lose their minds over that. People, what are you waving your hand at? Oh, we have to get Neil here in a minute. But there's, the term loose ball foul. There's no such thing. That's NBA term. There's actually a hand signal for it in the NBA. You take your hands and you spread them out to the side and then you join them over your head and go, and extend them back out. Indicates a loose
almost
ball
looks
foul.
Looks like a concert-like clap.
Well, no, it's not really over your head. It's in front of you.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like the breaking of the bread in the Mass. You just take your hands and go like that. But the reason for that is because they were trying to get away from the game being slowed down by a rebounding foul at one end of the floor on the offensive team. Now you got to go walk all the way to the other end and shoot a free throw. So they call it a loose ball foul and take it out of bounds. Well, we use that term all the time, and we're guilty of it as broadcasters because we say it because it's just a shorthand. It's a way to tell the listener or the viewer, hey, that was a foul that was committed before anybody had possession of the ball. So you see that loose ball foul, three syllables. A foul that was committed while the ball hadn't been secured by either team is a lot more syllables. So we say loose ball foul, but it doesn't really technically exist. It's a foul. That's all it is. A push, a hold, a grab, a trip, something. But that's the point. So there's a lot of phraseology that's imprecise. There's a lot of misunderstanding. The term that drives me nuts is offensive goaltending, which does not exist. Offensive basket interference is all that it is. Goaltending is the act of knocking the ball away on its way down to the basket on a shot by the defense. That's goaltending. Basket interference is touching the ball while it's on the rim or in the cylinder. Both teams can be called for that. No one can touch it when it's on the rim or in the cylinder. So there's defensive, they call it goaltending for anybody on defense, but it's actually defensive basket interference or offensive basket interference. Goaltending is just the ball on its way down to the basket and the defense blocks it after it's reached its apex. That's goaltending. That's illegal and that's 2 points or 3 points depending on the shot. But we hear all the time offensive goaltending doesn't exist. So we just, communication is adding to the confusion. Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post is going to join us next, and I guess we'll talk a little college hoop with him. Why not? Here on
when
the
message pass, the more you know.
Very nice, ladies. Reluctant Maria and Translating Teresa. Nice to have you girls with us. We'll take a break. ESPN 680 1057.
Scheller's Fitness and Cycling wants you to look and feel your. Hey, it's Andy. Hey, it's
Sandy Sweeney. Join me for The Take later today, 3 to 6 after Bobby V, right here on ESPN 680, 105.7. James Treble going to be hanging out with us. Another round of John Calipari to the NBA rumors. We'll have some fun with that. Louisville with the win last night. We'll wrap up some National Signing Day stuff. Rick Bozich of WDRB will join us at 5 o'clock. It's The Take later today, 3 to 6, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
ESPN 680 and 105.7.
In this trade in the NBA, all sorts of people going to have their mail forwarded now. Good Lord. It's a four-team deal that the details are just emerging. Let me see if I, they put it on the screen real fast. Let me see if I can find it. Good gravy. This was a lot of people involved in this deal. How about that? Where is it now? Let's go see if I can find this. They just put it on the screen. Four teams involved, a crap ton of players. Jordan Bell, that's not the one. Dang it, they just had it on the screen, and it's not yet on the internet, so I'll have to see when it comes up again. But Noah Vonleh and, I couldn't even get all the names fast enough. Unbelievable. Oh, there's good news. Rob Manfred says the Mets will not be sold to Steve Cohen. So we can look forward to it's like Groundhog Day for the Mets. The groundhog came out and saw a big pile of dung and said, "Oh, the Mets will suck for another 10 years." It's Mets Groundhog Day. All right, Neil Greenberg is going to join us here, and I'm told a little birdie told me that Neil, you're actually your favorite game of all, after Tiddlywinks, is college basketball. Is that true?
I do like March Madness. It's one of my most fun times of the year, for sure.
Now, it's a great gambling situation, but the question I have is, did you grow up as a diehard fan of a particular... Because you're a New York guy, right? I mean, so...
I am. I grew up right outside of Shea Stadium, so today's news is hurting the 13-year-old me.
Oh, my God.
But, I grew up pretty close to St. John's. In terms of college basketball, always... followed the Big East, always followed St. John's closest, I would say. Now my wife is from Virginia Tech, so we follow them quite a bit, too.
All right, well, they had a good year last year. They're surprisingly more competitive this year than I think a lot of people thought. So do you have any strategies that you use for when you are looking to March Madness to make yourself a lot of money?
I don't go overboard in the bracket. I don't pick too many upsets. I really do look for value. I look for places where people aren't picking teams. Like last year, I think a third of the brackets had Duke, and for that reason alone, I stayed away from Duke only because I thought they had maybe at best a 20% chance to win. So I thought that they were overvalued there. We get a lot of content at March Madness, and for me the biggest thing is be selective with upsets, and sometimes it's the 12 seed that's going to give you a lot of upsets, sometimes it's the 11, sometimes it's the 10. I think this year it's actually going to be the 10, but we'll have to wait and see as we get closer to Selection Sunday.
When you look at the landscape right now, it looks like that this year there is, by this time in most seasons, you kind of have like maybe, you know, 5-6 teams that you look at and say, oh, those are the most likely ones that could win the whole thing. I think Kansas and Louisville are on that list, but I think the list is pretty long this year of teams that you look at and say, well, they got a chance to go to the Final Four. How do you look at the landscape?
Yeah, I think that this is probably the most parity that we've seen in quite some time. I know that the NCAA is going to release their top 16 teams on Monday. You're going to see, three teams from the West Coast, be represented at some point in the tournament. They've only had three teams in the tournament twice before. You have San Diego State, obviously from the Mountain West. They're undefeated. They're certainly going to be high on a one or two line. I think that we're looking at a lot of teams that you can feel good about. Florida State. I'm actually going to be in Florida when they play Louisville. I'm going to be at that game.
Oh, nice.
So I think that the biggest question for me right now is which Big Ten team is going to assert themselves? Because if you look at the seedings now and all the projections, they could have as many as 11 teams in the tournament this year, starting with Maryland and Michigan State on down. That's a lot to have 11, and you know, like you said, none of them I would say are a favorite to win, but you would think that having that much talent. The team that wins the conference championship at least will be looked upon favorably.
Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post is with us. So many little nuggets I want to get to here. One of which is, and this is on your, you were part of the team that wrote this article, Damian Williams, not Patrick Mahomes, should have been the Super Bowl MVP. And I know there are some people who may have invested a shekel or two on that, so they were particularly salty about it. But there were a lot of people that thought that way. Is it to the point now, if you win, unless the quarterback throws like five interceptions, he's going to be the MVP?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's almost preordained that the quarterback from the winning team is going to be the MVP unless something else happens. And I'm a little surprised, usually when you see a defensive player or even another skill position player on offense win, it's because the quarterback didn't have a very good game. And I don't think Mahomes had a very good game at all that day. I mean, he threw a couple touchdowns, I get it, but he had that one interception, hit the 49ers quarterback right in the numbers. He wasn't really able to get loose until late. I would have thought Damian Williams with his two touchdowns would have cruised to the MVP. I'm actually surprised that he didn't get it. But, again, like you said, I think you have to believe it's going to be the quarterback from the winning team no matter how it shakes out, because that's just how the voters vote.
It's another thing of which you wrote, which strikes me as, you know, I grew up in New York. I root for all the New York teams. So the Yankees, there was a great satirical piece back when George Steinbrenner was alive that The Onion wrote, that he had signed every player in the major leagues. That was his, all of them. And he had it so that set up the pitching rotation so that every pitcher only had to pitch one inning the whole year. That was how
probably didn't know that it was false yet, right? I
mean, it's possible. Well, now the Dodgers have become the new Yankees. Your headline is adding Mookie Betts to the Dodgers lineup is almost unfair. It really is. That's a great team already, and they bring in a guy who is just a year removed from an MVP season and still playing at an extremely high level. Obviously the pressure is going to be immense on them, but good Lord, that's a powerful team right now.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you mentioned the Yankees because they have a little bit of a murderer's row right now, right? They have the reigning NL MVP in Cody Bellinger. They got Max Muncy, who they just signed to an extension. The top prospect, Gavin Lux, certainly seems like he's going to be able to contribute. And, you know, this is a team that won 106 games last year, is coming off back-to-back World Series losses against two teams that have been proven to be cheating. So I think that this is really something that we could see a historically good hitting lineup from top to bottom. And, I think everybody from odds makers in Vegas to fans around the league are looking at the Dodgers as, at the very least, a team to beat in the NL and of course, you know, make another World Series run. Betts is just so good. He's arguably the best player after Mike Trout. I don't think that there's too much you can argue about that in terms of his ability to hit, field, and run the bases. I mean, he really is a complete player.
And he's a good bowler.
That's true, yeah.
He absolutely is. Hey, again, bouncing around to some things. The Mets, the Knicks I almost said Leon Hess. Leon Rose in as their president. I might do well with Leon Hess, too, even though he's passed away. Who knows? But the fact of the matter is agents now are becoming the guys, not only, I mean, the guys who are the power brokers for deciding where players are going to play and are orchestrating deals where, you know, two and three players get together and try and create a super team. Now they're actually running the teams. This a good thing, a bad thing, or a neutral thing for sports in general and specifically for franchises that make that decision?
Well, I think that it's certainly becoming more prevalent, right? I mean, we've seen it. We've seen how well it works with the Warriors, and then the Lakers adopted that model as well. And now we're going to see the Knicks. And it looked like, you know, the Knicks, Leon Rose was kind of the plan B for the Knicks. They tried to get the general manager from Toronto, couldn't figure out a compensation package that was lucrative enough for Toronto to make it happen. You know, I think it's good in the sense that you have relationships with a lot of players, and it gives your front office a way to at least endear yourself to the player in terms of knowing what they want, knowing how they want to be negotiated with, and how to deal with other agents. And I think that we'll probably see more and more. That's only because the Warriors and the Lakers are having success. Not to say that, you know, LeBron James picking your team is really something that a general manager does. You know, there's still no doubt that they're having success. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of movement today in the NBA, some of which the Warriors are a part of, you know, sending Russell to Minnesota. I think that this is going to be more of the same. And, you know, if it makes it easier to land players, which I think it will, then I think it's probably a good move for each individual organization.
My understanding was, as the general manager, that one of the reasons the Knicks wanted him is he has a great sense of which bobbleheads to give away at the game. So that's, you know, I'm looking forward to the new bobblehead lineup from the Knicks. I do wonder about that, though. I mean, I mean, so many things come under the general manager's umbrella. But I guess as long as they make good personnel decisions, they'll hire people to do all the other stuff, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and I mean, I liken it to there's, you know, oftentimes lawyers will operate out of the district attorney's office only to turn to criminal defense law later in life. They make contacts, they see how the other half does things, and they feel like it gives them an advantage. I think, you know, the same parallel can be drawn here in that player agents lobbying for players on behalf of the players now goes over to the other side. My feeling is it probably makes their job a little bit easier.
Are you aware there's a Neil Greenberg who's a famous choreographer as well?
Oh, I am painfully aware. And I tell you, I celebrated like mad the day I Googled myself and I was actually above him in the search ranking.
Congratulations.
It's a red letter day. I'm on my calendar.
That must have made you very proud indeed.
Oh, my God. I'm so proud.
Although, I have to tell you, I was a little disappointed because I thought for sure that you were the guy that actually put together the extraordinarily celebrated quartet for three gay men. Which
you are not alone.
It's true.
But, 2006. I have no talent in terms of dancing.
I'm sorry. I do that all the time when we have guests on. I Google and see who has the same name. So that's you're right. He comes up right behind you. You are ahead of him, though, now. There's a Neil Greenberg.
I celebrated because I felt like that I finally made it.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely. You should be getting all liquored up here. You should be celebrating in the middle of the afternoon. There's no question about that. Hey, this is probably something that even an analytics person like you can't answer, but I'm going to ask you. Do you have any idea what in the world the odds must be for two teams to have played 100 times, I think it is. I think it's 100. They've each won 50. You know where I'm going with this. Duke and North Carolina. They have not only won the exact same number of games, they have the exact same total of points. 7,746. I equated that to like somebody getting three hole-in-ones in one round of golf. That seems ridiculous.
Yeah, that you probably couldn't duplicate that if you tried. That's just amazing. I couldn't even begin to try to figure out what the likelihood is. I'm just going to say that it's unlikely.
And, there we go.
We can just go from there.
I think that's safe. Hey, there's all sorts of deals going down in the NBA today, and yet the team in your backyard is eminently very quiet. Is that because they have no moves they can make, no moves they want to make? What's going on with the Wizards?
My guess is that there's no moves that they can make. You know, their top player, Bradley Beal, obviously is not going to be moved. They have John Wall injured, and his contract makes him virtually unmovable. I think that it's The Wizards, the one thing that people keep talking about, they still have a shot at the playoffs, and I keep thinking, like, why would they want to do that? I mean, like, you want to be as bad as possible in their situation. I know that they're a fun team to watch that can't play defense at all, or the defense is not that good. But the playoffs should be the last thing on their mind. The last thing that they should do is try to trade to get better. The only thing that they should trade for is draft picks. I just don't think they have enough assets that they can move to get anything back of note. So my guess is they're just going to let the young guys play, see what they have, hope John Wall makes a recovery, and then they can pair everybody up with Wall and Beal next year and try to gain some ground in the Eastern Conference.
It's a fascinating year, though, in the NBA, when you look at it. I mean, the East, which was the weak sister as a conference for so long, I mean, that Milwaukee's great. They've won 86% of their games, which is rather astounding. But look how deep the conference goes. I mean, you go down to the sixth spot, and you've got a team in sixth place in Philadelphia. It's a pretty good team at 31-20. And Miami's just trading their brains out today. I mean, they're they were supposed to be kind of in the doldrums for a while. They're 18 games over 500. They're rolling along. Toronto, who loses Kawhi Leonard, and they now have won 12 games in a row, and they are 37-14, 72% winning percentage. And then the West is always pretty deep. You go about six deep there. I mean, you still can make definitive favorites for who you think are going to be the conference finalists, but I just think this is a much more entertaining year than some years past, where by now it seemed like there are only three teams worth watching.
Yeah, and nothing's preordained, right? I mean, there used to be you can pencil in who was going to be in the NBA Finals year after year, and it got a little bit boring. You mentioned Miami. I mean, they're certainly going forward after the trade for Iguodala. We're seeing, as I said, Minnesota make some moves. So they're trying to stay relevant in the West. As good as the Lakers and the Clippers are doing, I mean, Denver's right there, Houston's right there, Utah's right there. And then, again, in the East, I mean, you have, what, one, two, three, four, maybe four or five teams within four wins of the eighth spot. So, yeah, I think this is going to be one of the more entertaining NBA playoffs, which is good because, like I said, I don't think that there's been much drama in the NBA playoffs for quite some time.
Is Andrew Wiggins' career underappreciated? I mean, it seems like people look at him as a bust. He's averaging over 22 points a game, but maybe that's because the Wolves, despite having Carl Anthony Towns and Wiggins, two really premier players, are so abysmal. I mean, they're next to last in the West. They're 15-35. It's almost hard to believe they could be that bad with those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much hype that comes around being the first overall pick. He's been a good player, but he hasn't been the superstar or megastar that you would think that you would get with the number one pick. I think at this point you have to kind of judge him on the benchmark of maybe like an all-star type player, not like a mega superstar like we've seen the likes of like Durant or even LeBron James when he was younger. So I think that, that's the measuring stick that we use for him, for better or worse. But he's had some decent seasons. I mean, he certainly can do some things. And, I just think if he finds the right role, he can be very, very productive. I mean, he almost has a career-high true shooting percentage this year. He's taking more three-point shots than he ever has. His assist rate is way up. So, I think he actually is improving. And, he's still young. He's only 24 years old. So he's got plenty of upside, I think, still to be seen.
It's always a pleasure, my friend. You know what I just found out, and I have to ask your advice. I will take you're how old? You don't mind me asking, right?
I am 46.
Okay, so you're younger than I. The Rolling Stones are coming into town here. Have you ever seen them in person?
I have not, but I am a Rolling Stones fan.
Okay, so then the answer is going to be easy for you, because I'm okay with them. I don't hate them. I don't love them. But if they're one of the groups that you say to yourself, if they're in your backyard and you've never seen them, you probably should, so that when you're on your deathbed, you can say, well, at least I saw the Rolling Stones. So.
Yeah, I think that they were always the British band that intrigued me the most, if we're looking at them, the Beatles and the Who. I'm a big fan of the blues, and I think that's what's appealing Dylan and me or the Rolling Stones. But when they have like their final tour is probably
in,
when.
In 2040, you mean?
Yeah, like when that's probably when I'll be motivated to see them. But this is what, their third final tour?
I think so.
Over the past couple of years. So, but I bet you it's a great show. I know my in-laws have seen them and they raved about it.
Wow. That's what I mean. I the sports radio host in me says I need to represent the element of the listeners that hate everything. So my guess is, you know, you'd say the Rolling Stones, right? They were good back in the Flintstones, right? I mean, didn't Fred Flintstone go to the concert? Yuck, yuck, yuck. I mean, they're not relevant to, but do they still connect? I mean, I see Paul McCartney and people still lose their mind over him, and he's 70. So I would think that they must still connect with people, no?
I think so. I mean, they had the theme song for that one of those CSI shows for a while. So, I mean, it's certainly recognizable, and I'm sure you could recognize, a dozen, if not two dozen, Rolling Stones songs within the first 3 seconds of hearing the music. So I think that they're still very relevant and still influencing many artists today. I could see it being a big event and appealing to a wide crowd. And, I would definitely go if I could. I just don't want to have to pay last tour prices for the third to last tour that they have on.
What a great marketing tool to have. Cher's on her fourth farewell tour, and this is going to be three for them. And
this is my last week on the show. This is my finale the show.
All right, we'll send you some prizes. That'll be great. Hey, okay, as a Rolling Stones fanatic, simple question, best Stones song ever, or your favorite anyway?
My favorite is Gimme Shelter, but the one that the one that always pops in my head is Jumping Jack Flash.
Oh, yeah. That's, I gotta admit, I do. I like that one my own self, so that's pretty good. All right, I'm gonna go see if I can get tickets right now. Actually, they're not on sale yet, but see if we can do that. And I'll mention your name, see if I get a better seat.
Okay, prepare to pay more.
All right, fair enough. Thanks, Neil. Good talking to you.
All right, talk to you soon.
Neil Greenberg, he's good. We like him. He's a nice guy. Oh, look at... Ben Franklin and Sam Malone are really knee deep in some heavy conversation. Well, because, Sam Malone obviously cheers Boston and explaining baseball to Ben Franklin, who has no idea what he's talking about because
wasn't invented. Kind of invented? I thought he was like.
No, that's Abner Doubleday, which is actually a fallacy, but good try.
No, seriously, I thought he was somehow tied to it. I don't know.
Ben Franklin wants to go outside.
Was he from Boston and then just kind of like did a lot of his cool stuff in Philadelphia?
That's a really, you know what? And that's the kind of question that intrigues me. So I'm going to go. I wonder if Reluctant Maria knows. She's amazingly good on American history, even though she's, not from this country. Like a lot of people who come here, they respect our heritage and they like to learn those things. Where was Ben Franklin born is the question. One of the founding fathers of the United States. He was born in Boston, Massachusetts, on Milk Street, in January 17th, 1706. So that would make him right now 300 and how many years old? 313 years old. He looks good for 313 years old.
Yeah, looks great.
Really
does.
That's
the secret.
He wants a beer from Sam, though.
Throwing tea into the Hudson?
He went into the Hudson.
Wow, tired. Boston.
Oh, wow. Really
and
sleepy.
Overthrowing.
You didn't even work last night. Why are you so sleepy?
So I watched the basketball game, and then I couldn't sleep, and I watched Toy Story 4.
Had you already seen that, hadn't you?
Yeah. It gets me every time.
Get you in the feels, did you? Did it?
Oh, yeah. I was crying.
God bless Ben Franklin, who was an independent. He was a political party. He was an independent. He's like, you're not painting me into a corner. We should have done this for We Want to Know Wednesday. I should have brought him in on Wednesday, yesterday, and told you because, man, did he invent a lot of crap. Did you know that? He lived in London for a long time, loved Europe. He met and courted his landlord's daughter, Deborah, and moved to but how about this? He went to London. He was dating Deborah and that little wench. While he was gone, she got married. That little slut. Only to be abandoned by her husband just months after the wedding. But look at Ben. Did not hold it against her. Said, that's fine with me. Rekindled the romance and took her as his wife in 1730. But then Ben was no angel either because then he fathered a son out of wedlock. So, but she said, listen, I did you wrong, so we'll take your kid in. So they took his kid in from out of wedlock, Then he had a son with this woman named Francis, but died, unfortunately. And then they had a daughter. Still doesn't tell you what he invented, which is what I'm looking
Sorry,
for.
Sorry, I don't know Jack's bit about history.
Oh.
That is interesting. Ben is a pimp.
He is not. That's not nice, translating Teresa. He invented the Franklin stove, provided more heat with less fuel. He invented bifocals rather than switching between two pairs of glasses. That was very clever. He invented the armonica. Not harmonica, an armonica. I've never even heard of that. A musical instrument composed of spinning glass bowls on a shaft. He invented the rocking chair, God bless him. He invented the flexible catheter. Oh, there are many people, I'm sure, are very grateful for that. I can't imagine an inflexible catheter. Good Lord, that must have been painful. The American
calidad musical y cómoda.
What was that, Maria?
Warm, musical, and comfortable.
What was that? I didn't even understand what Teresa said. She said what?
Warm, musical, and comfortable.
Oh.
All things that Ben made.
Very nice. How about this? This is pretty good. This is the. I love guys like this. Did not know this. This would have been a We Want to Know Wednesday classic. ESPN, We Want to Know Wednesday classic.
I don't know who was calling, but I just texted the phones out. I'm sorry. Oh,
good for them, because they don't need them right now. Ben Franklin devised a new scheme for the alphabet that looked to eliminate the letters C, J, Q, W, X, and Y, as he said they were redundant. So let's see how the alphabet would sound. A, B, D, E, F, G, pause, H, I, no, J, K, L, M, N. No, it doesn't work. That's why you couldn't do it. They couldn't do it because you couldn't sing the song. Very nice. He established the Academy of Philadelphia, which turned into what?
Alphabet soup would be whack.
Yeah, that would be whack. Thank you, Teresa. He basically was the founder of the University of Pennsylvania. Yes, I know, Ben. That's true. He's telling me they had a good basketball team for a long time in the Ivy League. Not so good now, though. Very nice.
Nittany Lions.
No, that's Penn State. Come on, Teresa. This is Penn. This is the University of Pennsylvania.
Shit.
That was for our online listeners, I take it. Teresa, you're a pistol there. No, Ben, the bobblehead Ben did not come with a kite. Ben had his real good times in Europe. That's true. Let's see. Saw the Stones at the old Cardinal Stadium, eighth row. Couldn't hear the phone ring for a week. Oh, I don't need that. I don't need not Milf Street. Milk Street. I guess. Ben was offended at that. I didn't say it. The listener said it. Ben, calm down. Amazing he knows what that means. Ben was pretty hip. All right, He's not coming in. All right, we'll go to break so he can come in without making him state his business. Top of the hour, we'll come back. ESPN 680-1057.
Declare su negocio.
State your business.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, future you gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.